This is The Guardian.
I'm Barry Cassidy.
And I'm Tony Barry.
Welcome to Back to Back Barry's, a podcast from Guardian Australia. Well, I'm keen later on, Tony, to get your take on the leaked review of the Coalition's disastrous election campaign, and we'll look at new polls and look ahead to real polls that are just around the corner now in South Australia and in the federal electorate of Farah. But obviously, first, we walked out of the studio last week and a war broke out. The United States, again, at war. Australia, again, supporting them, not militarily this time, but supporting them nevertheless. I want to give you a sense of where I'm coming from on this as a baby boomer. Vietnam. I was 15 when the United States went into that war. I was 25 when it ended. Millions of Vietnamese civilians were killed. The misery and the anguish went on right to this day because of the use of Agent Orange. The end of it all, North Vietnam won the war, and they controlled the country ever since. In Iraq, a war based on a lie about weapons of mass destruction. 300,000 civilians killed and no real strategic value out of that. Afghanistan, I was 51 when that broke out and 71 when it ended. 150,000 civilians killed. The country was impoverished. And after 20 years, when the war ended, the Taliban took back control. And now we support the United States again in another endeavour. And worse this time, I think, because we support them with Donald Trump in charge. So Australia now, the government, is effectively backing his justifications, his judgments, his strategies, and worst of all, I think, his moral values. Hopefully, it won't be the worst American war in my lifetime, but I think it could be the dumbest. What do you think?
Yeah, I worry it's not so much Operation Epic Fury, but Operation Epic Fuck Up. I'm not a military strategist. This is back-to-back Barry's, not back-to-back military strategists, but it does seem a little bit chaotic. And of course, anything that involves Trump, I worry about its motivations principally. The interesting thing to me is a big part of his pitch to the electorate in the past has been he's been the president that has never started a war, you know, going back to 39.
And I think that was working well for him.
Yeah, it was a big part of his pitch. You know, it was highly influential over the vote considerations of many people. And now he's sort of entered one war, and of course, Venezuela, which was, you know, not a war, but highly provocative. And then, of course, he's been talking about Greenland. So you do wonder about, you know, has this got something to do with a distraction from the economy? Because, of course, you know, another part of his pitch was that he would fix the economy on day one, and inflation would start coming down. And, of course, the Epstein files, which is, you know, always... And that is, you know, if you listen to some of those American podcasts about focus groups, and they'll play some of the focus groups, like, that is a big thing because Epstein represents the insiders and Trump has always pitched himself as an outsider, but they're outsider. And so you do fear that there's more to this. Obviously, disarming Iran from nuclear capacity is an important strategic consideration. But his motivations is what worries me.
And it's not just his motivations either. Whenever you raise any opposition to the war, you get the usual thing. You get this litany of evils about the regime in Iran. And all of it true. All of it.
Yep.
But that's not the question. It's not about that. It's about what is the best way to deal with the issues that are presented by that regime. How do you prevent them from developing a nuclear weapon? How do you free the country from the awful ideology of the Ayatollahs? How do you limit their ability to spread terrorism? Do you do that by bombing the crap out of them from a distance without any real strategy about how that will change anything? What it will do is reduce their military capacity, no question. But beyond that, you could do all of this. You could have all of these lives lost. You could go on for a very long time. There could be a really enormous economic consequence to all of this, and not much will change. And that's the debate that we should be having, and not just a question of backing Trump, no matter what he does. The question marks, I think, will drag on for a while. But what disturbs me too is that when Australia signs up to this kind of signs up in a sense that they're giving moral support to the war, is the nature of the people that they're dealing with. Peter Hegseth, who's the Secretary of War, well-named Secretary of War, and he says, so many of our traditional allies wring their hands and clutch their pearls at the use of force. Well, There will be no rules of engagement, no nation-building quagmire, no democracy-building exercise. And then he went on to say, it won't be a fair fight. He says, never was going to be a fair fight. We'll be punching them while they're down. I mean, I hope the kids of America are listening to that. That's not the words of a statesman. It's the words of a thug. Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State. Now, this is not so brutal, but it just doesn't make any sense. He said it was clear that if Iran came under attack by anyone, US or Israel, anyone, they were going to respond against the United States. So we needed to go first. So what happened? They went first. After that, Iran retaliated by bombing United States facilities in 10 countries. So that was a brilliant strategy. Trump himself, though, always Trumps himself. He talked about, the question to him was, who should be the new leader in Iran? He said, well, most of the people we had in mind are dead. Now he had another group and they may also be dead. But since then he said that that he believes they would have had nuclear weapons in 2 weeks had they not bombed when they did. He said their navy is gone. 24 ships in 3 days, I think he said. Anti-aircraft weapons are gone. No air defence. All of their planes gone. It's just mind-boggling stuff that he's making these kind of judgments on the way. And I think the problem for the government here or anybody that supports the war, any of the governments supports the war, is that they always say stupid things. But the media kind of just factors that in, and in a sense they almost normalise some of it. But you can't say those kind of things when you're at war. You've got to be far more precise. You've got to be accurate. And I think that's... See, the media does tend to ignore some of it, but not now. And so it's difficult, I think, for countries to maintain the level of support that seemed to be there in the early stages.
Yeah, and I thought Mark Carney's visit this week, Canadian Prime Minister, was unique timing. And there was some, I thought that was a very interesting conversation that he continued from his Davos speech.
In fact, it does dovetail into what we're talking about, because he talks about the sort of the misdemeanors now and the of the major powers that that the power blocks have just turned their backs on the world order such as it was, and what is needed is a solid block of middle powers to kind of counteract that. And I'm sure he would have in mind, particularly trade and the way that tariffs have been used for coercion, for virtually political blackmail when it came to Canada. So he's trying to build up that regime. It's that kind of middle power block. It's interesting that that he gave that speech in Davos, and then very soon after that, Albanese invited him to address the Parliament in Australia. And it's almost as if Albanese's happy to have him lead on it, because it's easy for him in a sense. He's had this straight out stoush with Trump. There's no getting away from it. But they also have the security of being where they are. They're right on the border with the United States. They separate Alaska from the rest of the United States. And so the United States would never let anybody infiltrate Canada. So he can speak with that kind of security where perhaps Australia can't. But you do get the impression that that Albanese would sign up to most of the logic of what he's talking about.
And interestingly, Angus Taylor jumped straight up and endorsed it. He didn't have a holding pattern form of words or sort of, move slowly towards it. He just came straight out and sort of me-tooed it. I think in theory it has enormous potential, but there's a long way to go before it sort of materialises. And I think, can he sign up the likes of Singapore and Japan and these other countries to...
Indonesia, South Korea, India. See, it's because it's really a counterbalance to the three countries I think that they all have in mind, and that's Russia, China and now the United States. Who just turned their back on all the old orders. So it's a question of how loosely defined that kind of relationship will be, but it will certainly get a lot of countries thinking about it. He went to India before he came to Australia, so he had that in mind. Well, one issue I want to go back to, though, on the war with Iran, before we move on to other domestic issues, and that's the issue of the sinking of the Iranian ship. And the death of most of the sailors on board. Now, that ship was invited to go to military exercises. It was sort of a show of force for a whole bunch of countries, including the United States, was invited to India. And they were on their way back. They got as far as Sri Lanka when a United States submarine blew it out of the water, and no warning, no real attempts to save any of the lives of those people on board. It's an issue now for Australia because there were three sailors on board. That's been confirmed. They were there as part of the AUKUS agreement, as a training exercise, you know, to get Australian sailors up to speed on what goes on in these submarines and so on. It may be a very small thing in the whole scheme of things, but it now associates Australian sailors and therefore the government directly with the conflict and in a particularly sus military operation in international waters. Do you think it's something that is going to be difficult now for the government to deal with?
No, I mean, the reports are just emerging. I think it's difficult to hold Albanese, the Prime Minister of Australia, responsible for a training exercise. And of course, these military training exercises between other countries is very, very common. So I doubt that he had prior knowledge or awareness of what specific sort of, Defence Force personnel were doing at any given time. But I think, you know, in the macro of the story, it will be, from Australia's point of view, will be the impact that it has on inflation and therefore interest rates. And again, it just sort of, it does not feel like something that's been particularly well thought through. And so I think that the domestic ramifications will be the bigger part of the story.
Well, it'll be big. I don't know whether it can match the potential for the civilian lives that could be lost in this conflict, and if it broadens even further, and probably will. But look, beyond that, I think when you talk about inflation, you know, petrol, the price of petrol, such a big influence on inflation, and then interest rates go up, and every Australian feels the impact. Just before we take a break and go on to domestic issues, I went back and reread the Davos speech, Carney's speech in Davos, which got the debate going about the middle powers. And he said this, it really struck me. He said that the strong can and will do what they like. The weak must suffer. But then this, there's a tendency for others to go along just to get along, to accommodate, to avoid trouble, hoping compliance will buy safety. I mean, those words, it'd be interesting to know how many within the Parliamentary Labor Party would feel uncomfortable hearing those words. But at the very least, it's that kind of thinking, I think, that would encourage Australia to take very seriously any ideas around the middle powers trying to compete with the current power blocks that exist. Okay, we'll take a break. Back in a moment.